There's a lot of happy kids around this week. You know why? Summer vacation just started, right, Noah? You off? A lot of happy teachers, too. Somebody said, that's great. I love that. If you've been here the last couple of Sundays, you've actually gotten the chance to see some of our children from our youth program here, too. A couple of weeks ago on Mother's Day, we had little Marin Merkel. We had a welcoming ceremony for her. That's always fun. And last week, we had our teens up front, and some of them graduating, six of them graduating this year from their own schools. On any given Sunday, for those of you who don't know, during the second service, we have between 50 and 60 children upstairs in our youth program from four different age groups, each of them learning things appropriate to their age group, learning things actually that I wish I had learned on Sunday mornings when I was their age. For example, instead of learning the seven sacraments and the 12 fruits of the Holy Ghost, don't ask if you don't know what that is. I wish somebody had taught me things like meditation, things like the fact that God loves everybody, including me, no matter what religion they are. I wish someone had taught me that I actually have the power to choose what I want my life to look like, things like that. It would have saved me a lot of grief in my 20s, 30s, and 40s if I had learned that, and hopefully that's what it's going to do for our kids. Now, no matter what age they are or what they're doing, kids are amazing to watch, not because the little ones are cute and the older ones are so smart, but because children have so much to teach us. I mean, most adults think that it is our job to teach the children, but sometimes I think we have it backwards. That's what I want to talk about today. Whenever I see children playing, all different ages, all different races, all different sizes, whatever it is, I can't help but remember that we're all that way, every single one of us, once upon a time. And that simple fact actually amazes me, because I look at them all playful and doing what they're doing, and then I look at us walking around, going to work, you know, being so formal and all this other stuff, and I can't help but think, how the hell did this happen? You know, how did it happen? Okay, how can such a creative, joyful, unlimited spiritual being, which is what the kids are, change in just a few short years into someone who spends all their time thinking about paying the mortgage and balancing your checkbook and living a life that doesn't have nearly enough fun in it? In other words, for a lot of people, I'm not entirely convinced that the transformation from childhood to adulthood is something to celebrate. You know, because as adults, we are more educated, we make more money, we buy cars and houses, we can date people, we can run major corporations, we can do all those things. But in the process of acquiring all of those grown-up talents that we're told we're supposed to acquire, I believe that there are some extremely valuable childhood skills that a lot of us have left behind, either consciously because we were told to do it, so we did it, or unconsciously simply by watching the people around us. Now, there's a poem, it's not a poem, it's sort of a prose piece here, and it's written by a poet by the name of Percy Bysshe Shelley. Everybody heard of Shelley, you know, when you're in high school, and it's really lovely. Listen to this. He says, "Do you know what it is to be a child? It is to be something very different from the man of today. It is to have a spirit still streaming from the waters of baptism. It is to believe in love, to believe in loveliness, to believe in belief. It is to be so little that the elves can reach to whisper in your ear. It is to turn pumpkins into coaches and mice into horses, lowness into loftiness, and nothing into everything. For each child has a fairy godmother in its soul." Isn't that pretty? Really, really nice. Now, hold that thought, okay? A number of years ago, one of the airlines, I think it was Southwest at the time, and this was 20 years ago, they had a special promotion. And the promotion was children under the age of 7 or 8 or whatever it was got to fly free with an accompanying adult. And I remember thinking what a great idea that was. I was a pilot at the time. I was at the airport every week a lot, and I had never seen so many kids running around the airport and on the airplane, most of them their first time at an airport or their first time flying. Now, the flight attendants were going crazy on the airplane, you know, but the kids were really, really excited. And the excitement that they felt being there was actually contagious. Instead of people being gruff, they'd look at the kids and they'd smile, remembering the first time they flew. clue. In fact, none of these kids were scared, almost none of them. In fact, in the 26 years that I spent as an airline pilot, the only children I ever saw on the airplane who were afraid to fly were those whose parents made them that way because the parents were afraid to fly. And you could tell when they walked on the plane. If mom or dad was afraid, so was the kid. Now, if you look back at a lot of the most well-known children's stories that most of us grew up in, as far back as you can find, a lot of their stories, those stories include a fantasy about flying. All the way back to 1001 Arabian Nights with Aladdin on the flying carpet, to Superman in the comic books, our modern-day mythology, being able to fly means that they can escape from the limitations of their size and their age, and they can go places where they would never be able to go with their parents. One of my favorite fairy tales, a lot of you are familiar with it, the story of Peter Pan, remember the Mary Martin version? You don't remember that. Never mind. Anyway. But in Peter Pan, Peter, the young boy who never grows up, flies in through the window of the bedroom of the three children, Wendy, John, and Michael, those three, that size. And these three children, who have very formal parents, are fascinated by the way that he flies around the room. And so the older boy, John, who is the logical one, always asking the logical questions, he says, "Now, how do you do this?" And Peter laughs and he says this. I went back and got the original copy, I have one at home, of this. And Peter said, "You just think lovely, wonderful thoughts and they lift you up into the air." Now, he was actually lying because besides wonderful thoughts, you had to have fairy dust. Okay, but after Tinkerbell did her thing and threw a little fairy dust on him, whatever, these three children floated up, and they floated out the window, and they were off to where? Never Never Land. Okay, you remember how to get to Never Never Land? Anybody remember that? Second star to the right and straight on till morning. Excellent. Al, was that you? Very, very good. Oh, there's Scott. Great, great. Okay. Now, just like most fairy tales, I believe there's a lot of wisdom in this one. Now, through the years, I have found that when I focus on lovely, wonderful things in my life, instead of focusing on things that are, scary and making me nervous or serious things, when I'm focusing on things that are exciting and liberating, I can fly, actually, in a manner of speaking, because I'm no longer tied to the material world by some unseen restrictive force. I can go places that I couldn't go before. I can actually take my relationships and my creativity and my lifestyle, whatever it is, to a higher level. Now, children have always understood this intuitively. In fact, every single one of us knew it once upon a time. Children have always known things that we adults can no longer seem to figure out. They have a wisdom that is not limited by their past experiences because they don't have as many past experiences as we do. Because if they did feel that way, they would never be able to learn all of the things that they have to learn in the beginning. Because psychologists estimate that the volume of information that a child absorbs in their first 5 years is more than the amount of information that they absorb in the next 70 or 80. More information in that first 5 years. And if you've had children grow up, you're aware of that. They are like a sponge. Now, logically, it doesn't make any sense. Their brain is smaller than adults. They can't read. Their muscles and their reflexes aren't fully developed. But these tiny creatures, no more than 2 or 3 years old, learn to walk, they learn to talk, they learn to eat, to ride a bike, they learn to dress themselves, they learn to say no, they learn that very easily. Children who are under a year old can be taught to swim very, very well. And some 3-year-olds, as we have found, are better at using a computer than a lot of the people in this room. So, these kids are really, really sharp. So here they are. They're tossed into this world that's full of all these incredible and interesting things to do that we don't even think about, we take for granted, and they just start doing it all. They start doing it all. At least they start doing it all until we start teaching them that we can't. Until society starts teaching them to be careful, to be afraid, and to be sensible, which is what we do. Now, in the in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the sacred book of the Hindu faith, some of you know, there's a saying. And the saying is, all water flows into the ocean, but the ocean never overflows. And you go, gee, that's kind of a strange saying. But that's what it's like with a child. All of this information, all of this stuff is flowing into them, and they simply assimilate it. They're never overloaded. I have a brother who lives in Jordan. I went to visit him a few weeks ago, some of you know, and he was telling me that a lot of the people who work at the embassy are mixed marriages. They're the mother and father from two different countries. And all of their children, even as young as 5 or 6 years old, speak three languages. They speak the language of the mother, the language of the father, and the language of the place that they're living in. My nephew, who's 9 years old, speaks four languages now fluently. And now he's learning Arabic as number five, all right? They were not taught these languages specifically. They just learned them. They just picked them up. So I don't know about you, but I'm actually curious why our tendency to learn new things changes so drastically as we get older. Now, the scientists tell us our receptiveness is better early on, that the neurons of our brain are different, and some of them tell us, the anthropologists tell us, that it's a survival mode back from the caveman days, because we had to learn all that information fast to survive, and that may be part of it, but I'm not sure that it's as much of it as we are led to believe. I think, in many ways, the ability of a child to learn so much so fast doesn't come from those abilities. I think it comes from what they haven't learned. They haven't learned to be distracted by their past experiences. They haven't learned to focus their energy and attention on their past failures. They haven't learned to be affected by what other people think. Because if a 1 or 2 year old child was affected by those things, they'd never learn to walk. Okay, think about it. 18 months old, whatever age they do this. What if they were thinking about how many times they fell down yesterday when they were trying to walk? Okay, what if they thought about how silly they look with these big baggy pants and those wobbly legs, and they're worried about the way people look at them? What if they were worried about how quickly other people learned to walk and whether they were doing it right? Okay, this time. Eventually, they would quit. They'd end up crawling everywhere, telling everyone they meet, you know, I tried that walking thing, you know. It wasn't for me, okay, you know. Crawling's great, it's very stable, I can get to where I need to go, you know. Instead, they just start walking, they just start doing that. So most of us look at children playing, and we're talking about small children here because it changes as they get older. We probably think, you know, they look like they're having so much fun, and I'd be like that if I could, but I have responsibilities. You know, these kids don't know how good they have it. And then we go about our business, worrying about what might happen tomorrow, looking at other people's problems, hoping they don't happen to us. We worry about, you know, the stock market and the portfolios and the IRAs and all that other stuff. And if someone we know gets diagnosed with something serious, we run to the doctor for a checkup. Now, kids don't think about these things, and for good reason. They're too busy thinking about what they want to do in this moment. Their mind is so full of possibilities that they don't have room for limitations. I like what the comedian Paula Poundstone, you know her, funny, funny lady, she said, the reason adults are always asking kids what they want to be when they grow up is because the adults are looking for ideas for themselves, you know? Which is very, very true. I like that. So here's a question, okay? Just take this question on your own. How many of your thoughts, and yours, and yours, and yours, you know, all of us, on an average day are about things that you wish you could do if only, that's the words, if only life were different? If only you had more money, if only you had more time, if only you had someone to love, if only you were younger or thinner or better educated, whatever it is. You see, the words if only should be X-rated because they're for adults only. They are. If only is for adults only. Kids don't get caught up in that kind of thinking because those kind of thoughts are very, very heavy. They weigh us down like we're carrying around a bag of rocks. That's why all the fairy tales that deal with flying have one thing common to them, and that is only children can fly. That's the secret. Adults already know that flying is impossible, so they don't try. But the children haven't figured it out yet. So they just go ahead and do it. Now, you see, when we were very young, further back than most of us can remember, we always had a lot every day to look forward to. We woke up in the morning excited about the day ahead. We woke up thinking about what we could do, about what we wanted to do, instead of what we couldn't do or what we had to do that we didn't want to do, which is kind of the way we wake up this morning. As children, if we could imagine something, then we could at least go out and try it. And we did. That's what we believed. We were filled with an attitude that we can call enthusiastic expectation. Remember last week I said the word enthusiasm comes from en and theos, which means God within. Expectant, enthusiastic expectation. We weren't afraid. We were discovering new things everywhere we looked. We were playing new games. We were asking all kinds of questions. Our life was expanding, but we didn't even think about it as our life. We just thought about it as life, as things were. So we moved forward every day with complete confidence and pure joy without worrying about where the wall was, like the song Patrick just sang, without worrying about the boundaries, without worrying about whether it would all stop. But at some point, and it's different for all of us, things started to change. Or to be more precise, things didn't change. We started to change. Very gradually, depending on our parents and our schoolmates and our friends and those things, we began to allow things like fear and worry and resentment and self-doubt to seep into our mind and become a part of who we were, because we kept hearing about them so often from what we thought were reliable sources, our parents, our teachers, and our ministers. Now, these negative thoughts that we were picking up one at a time, just like picking up sand in your shoe, they were like grains of sand, actually, that were being poured into a smoothly running machine, a laughing, playing creativity machine with the sand being poured into it. And in far too many cases, the gradual effect was to grind that playful machine to a halt. Once we were indoctrinated into the ways of the world, instead of being spontaneous, instead of living instinctively, we started to react to these thoughts as if they had a power of their own. Unfortunately, and we talk about it in this teaching all the time, once we accepted them as true, they became the truth for us, even if they weren't true at all. And the result was we no longer felt connected to our spiritual center, to our spiritual center. That's when we stopped living as if we were joyful individual expressions of a loving and playful God. That's when we stopped experiencing the joy of childhood. And that's when life got hard. In the Christian New Testament, many of us grew up with it, when the teacher Jesus said that we must be as little children to enter the kingdom of heaven, he wasn't telling us that we needed to learn something new. He was telling us to unlearn something that we should never have learned in the first place. He was telling us that we need to look inside, to pray, to know, to look in our heart, to remember something that we already knew once upon a time. That's why the philosopher Aldous Huxley, in his book, The Perennial Philosophy, he said, "We cannot know nature, life, love, in all of its essential sacred beauty unless we first unlearn the dirty devices of humanity." I love that phrase. In other words, what he was saying was, and Jesus was saying, we need to unlearn those things that keep us separated from our source. We're not separated, but we behave as if we were. Now, just to be clear, we're talking here about having a childlike mind as opposed to having a childish mind, okay? And here's the difference. A childish mind, and we all know, anybody know someone with a childish mind? Sure we do. A childish mind is self-absorbed, okay? It wants to be taken care of, all right? It doesn't want to learn anything, and it is afraid of everything. But a childlike mind is not afraid of the world. It is fascinated by the world. It loves to be free. It sees the truth more clearly because it doesn't have all the other stuff in the way. A childlike mind acts on pure faith because it knows intuitively that life is on its side, that life supports it. In The Science of Mind, Dr. Holmes writes this. He said, "We must become as little children. How we long for a return to that simple trust in life which children have. In their minds, there are no doubts. They have not yet been told that they are sinners," or sinners, as we say. "They are no longer connected to the divine, that they are sinners no longer connected to divine guidance and spiritual life." And then he says, "The life of the child is lived in natural goodness because God is natural goodness." The life of a child is lived in natural goodness, or we could say as natural goodness, because God is natural goodness. Now, this is not a new message. We've all heard this stuff before. And if we are on a spiritual path, and if you're in a place like this on Sunday morning, you are on a deliberate spiritual path, we're moving in this direction towards the childlike mind. And that's good, because we're all trying to balance our life in the world with our spiritual understanding about what the world is and how it works. But our childlike wisdom has to be a part of that balance, which means we have to remember what being a child feels like. And that's what we can do by watching the children play. No matter who we are, no matter what's going on in our life in the moment, at one time in our life, we knew that we could fly, okay? We knew that we could let our imagination take us anywhere that we wanted to go. At one time, we were all the star of our own play and the hero of our own movie. So the question we should probably be asking is, how do we get back to that state of mind, besides just watching children and wishing we could be like that? What are some of the best characteristics of our childhood that we might start bringing back into our life today so we can not only grow and accomplish things, but enjoy ourselves, have fun while we're doing it? So here are a few. One of the most important characteristics, if not the most important, that we need to get back to is spontaneity. Spontaneity, okay? We need to allow ourselves to have a creative idea, to have an outrageous thought, and to do something with it before we kill it with logic or allow someone else to squash it. That's what we have to do. I once read about a mother, it was great. She kept what she called in her purse a "why not" notebook. Okay? And every time she had an offbeat idea about something fun to do with her kids, she immediately wrote it down. You know, why not take the kids to the fire station and let them slide down the pole? Okay? Why not go to a farm and let them milk a cow? Why not go to a fortune teller? She would write all these things down. And as soon as possible, she made a point to do each and every one of these things and then to check it off. It wasn't my mother, I got to tell you, okay, who did this? So let me ask you this, okay? You know, my mother was like, why not get him fingerprinted? Why not put him in jail for, you know? So let me ask you this, okay? How many wonderful childlike ideas do you have in an average day that never last until the evening because your grown-up mind said it wasn't appropriate, it wasn't safe, or it was just plain silly and somebody might see me doing it, okay? How many ideas like that do you have? Another characteristic we need to get back is to allow ourselves to enjoy each and every moment. Not to force ourselves, but to allow us, because something in us wants to do that. We spend too many of our present moments wondering what's going to happen tomorrow or trying to rationalize something that happened last week. A child pours their whole heart and their whole energy into what they are doing now. When they are playing, if you watch them, they are completely present. Body, mind, and spirit, all in the same place at the same time. Now, in the Buddhist teaching, they call this mindfulness. But children do it automatically. They don't know what it's called. They just do it. And if we start to pay attention to what we're thinking about in the moment, we can start to do it too. Another thing children don't do is they don't get distracted by judging other children. That's something they learn later watching us judge one another. Small children don't recognize anything about race, about even gender in many cases if they're small enough, or sexual orientation or political affiliation. They don't look at another child's behavior and hear what they say and go, I wonder what they meant by that. Okay? They don't go there. All right? They don't worry about what the other kid's wearing until they become teenagers. They aren't worried about impressing anybody. And as a result, they don't spend any time at all worrying. They let their mom do it. Leave it to a professional, I always say. They let their mom worry, okay? Think of it this way. If your child, or the child of a friend, if you don't have children, or a nephew or a niece, whatever, came to you and was worried about the rate of inflation, or the consumer, a five-year-old maybe, or the consumer price index, or worried about where they were going to get the family car fixed, what would you say to them? You know, you would probably, hopefully, tell them to relax, tell them to lighten up, that things are being handled, just go outside and play. Don't worry about these things. Well, maybe that's what this wonderful power that we call God, this perfect loving intelligence that expresses life through us, maybe that's what it's telling us every single day. Relax, lighten up, it's all handled, go outside and play. Go outside and play. I once read that there are two types of people in the world, those who think life is a privilege and those who think life is a problem. Okay? That sounds like the difference between children and adults. The most valuable gift that we can give to ourselves and to the world is to regain the ability to fly. To fly. To break away from the bonds of limitation that we have tied with our own hands, tying ourselves to the earth. We have to remember that we are one with the power that never gets old, never gets tired, never gets jaded. And if we consciously choose to do so, very important, consciously and choose, those two words, to do so, we can maintain the joy of childhood until we are 55, 75, or even 105. And when we finish here, when we die happy, hopefully playing, doing something we love, we can go somewhere else, wherever we go next, and we can enjoy it there. In the book Living the Science of Mind, Dr. Holmes writes this. He says, whether we are 70 or 16, there should be in every person the love of wonder, the sweet amazement at the stars and the star-like things and thoughts, the undaunted challenge of events, the unfailing childlike appetite for what next, and joy in the game of life. All of these things he mentioned are already ours. The joy, the amazement, the childlike appetite for what comes next. We had them as children, and they didn't go anywhere. They're just like a childhood toy that we stashed away in the back of a closet and forgot about. So all we have to do is find the closet, open it, find that shelf, pull off the toy, dust it off a little bit, and start playing with it again. Because that's the only way we're going to remember how much we used to enjoy it. So I got some homework for you. How many people promise to do what I'm going to tell you to do right now? Ooh, boy, you guys are... Whew. This week, I want you to go to Toys R Us, are they still around, whatever, to Target, you know, go to the toy section, and I mean the toy section, okay? Find something you like and buy it for yourself, okay? And if somebody says, oh, who are you buying that for? You tell them, I'm buying it for me, okay? And then you go home and you play with it. Lincoln Logs, Tinker Toys, whatever you want to get. Remember that stuff, okay? And if someone sees you, they come in the house and you're on the floor playing, and they ask you, what are you doing? Just tell them, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember. Because if you keep on playing long enough, eventually you will. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. All right. All right, boys and girls, let's do this. Let's take a moment. And in this moment, let's see ourselves, not the way we look in a mirror, but the way in which we look in our heart. All of us feel the same age we felt when we were young, a little more experienced, a little more jaded, but our thoughts are the same because our spiritual being never changes. So the joy of life that our spirit had when we were 3 or 4 years old is the same joy of life that is in our spirit now if we are 40 or 50 or 60 or more. It has not changed. The only thing that has changed is the amount that we use it. So as we begin to shift our consciousness now, we start to look at the world as something that's actually funny. Sometimes funny in a sad sort of way, but even where there is sadness, we look at the joy. We look at the beauty. We look at the world around us, the people around us who are so serious. And in the morning, whether we do it for real or just do it figuratively, we put on our red clown nose and we start to walk around. And we realize that as we stop taking life so seriously, that life presents it to us itself to us in more joyful ways. We begin to play with toys. We begin to play with children. We begin to be wherever we are with a childlike mind, seeing the simplicity, seeing the opportunity, seeing the playfulness, supporting others, playing with others. This is the power that we have, to be in the world in a completely different way from what we have learned to be in the world in the way we were in the beginning. So I invite you to take a few moments in the silence of your own mind. And in this time, in the center of your mind's eye, I want you to see yourself as a child. Think of a picture that your mother has or your father, or think of a picture that you may have hidden away in an album of a child who is 3, 4, 5 years old, funny haircut, funny clothes, smiling, laughing. In this silence, simply see yourself and embrace yourself as the child you see. Take these moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we embrace the child, not the child that we were, but the child that we still are. That part of us that is childlike, we embrace it, we honor it, we learn from it, and we let it out to play. With gratitude for the child that we were and the child that we are, with gratitude for this awareness, we accept this truth as our own. We have transformed the new truth and found a greater truth that we always had. We accept this and we release it into consciousness now, letting it be so for us from this moment on. And so it is.